Welcome to another edition of Lying on the Beach. I'm Steve Greenberg with
Lois Whitman Hess.
And today we're going to be talking about something very interesting, something I've always had an interest in, but really no knowledge in, which is all about Kabbalah. But I want to make a point first that Lying on the Beach is now powered by the Handle Stick, the must-have phone accessory that adds stylish jewelry and usability to your smartphone. We'll tell you more about Handle Stick in just a little bit. But first up, our guest today is Rabbi Mark Philippi. I think I'm pronouncing it right. Is it Philippi? Am I pronouncing it right?
Philippe.
Philippe. Mark Philippe. That's why I didn't want to say that. Philippe. He's a cantor, musician, composer, and a conductor at Temple Emmanuel on Miami Beach. He's also the founder of the Jewish Symphony in Boca Raton. Rabbi Mark Philippe is also a practitioner of Jewish meditation. He's the founder of Kadosh House, a Jewish spiritual center in Miami where session classes, retreats, and seminars are offered in Kabbalah, Jewish meditation, and alternative healing. The rabbi is also a certified hypnotist and is particularly interested in past life regressions. He and his wife Valerie host large monthly Shabbat dinners at their home and in a wide variety of venues throughout Miami. And my first question for the rabbi is, why have I never been invited to any of these events? I'm a little hurt. But
Wait a minute, Steve, did you mention that he's the rabbi of the prestigious Temple Emmanuel in Miami
Beach? I did, right at the very top.
Okay.
I said that.
Okay, I had him.
Yes.
I had a senior moment. Go ahead.
Okay.
Need to be in our mailing list, emailing list, so you know, like, the amazing events that we hold.
Well, I'm going to go right now. I feel a little slighted, but I'm going to get past it. I'm moving forward. So let's talk about Kabbalah. I mean, the one thing a lot of us know about it is that you wear a little red string on your wrist, and I know Madonna and Demi Moore and Ashton Kutcher and a whole bunch of celebrity folks have joined the ranks of those into Kabbalah. So what is it, and why should I know about it?
Okay, so the red string is a little bit cliche, and while it's really meaningful, Kabbalah is a bit too big to restrain it to be contained in a red string. And then you have many stars who have embraced studies in Kabbalah. That doesn't make them Kabbalists, but students of Kabbalah, and I don't know how they are studying, and so if it's good for them, then good for them. You know, I'm happy. There are institutions that try to teach Kabbalistic concepts, and we have to be really careful. If sometimes they're after your money, and they're trying to teach perhaps Kabbalistic concepts that are really, really deep. And, you know, if you want to participate in the Olympics, you need to know how to run and you need to train a little bit and have some basics. It's the same thing in Kabbalah, you know. So if you don't know what you're talking about, we need to put everything in context, so it makes sense. This being said, anybody can study the basics of Kabbalah, because we can all benefit from that, because that pertains to the soul, which is one thing that we all have in common.
And by benefit, let's talk about those benefits. What kinds of benefits would it bring to someone who comes to it saying, okay, here I am, ready to learn? What do you take away from it? Better understanding of yourself, or something greater or lesser than that? What's the takeaway?
Okay, so you're asking a really big question, as if, you know, it's a little bit nonchalant, and I can talk to you for a long time, but really quickly, people talk about mindfulness. You have heard of mindfulness, right?
Right. Yes.
To be present in the moment, and so there's a lot of mindfulness, Jewish mindfulness. And I said, when I use Jewish, it's only Jewish teachings. You know, when you talk about Kabbalistic concepts, it's it's really for everyone. Jews study him, study it, but anybody is you know, is welcome to study these concepts, like as I mentioned about the soul, for example. So the benefit is when you are in touch with your soul, when you actually start to understand the different levels of the soul and what it means. And so, like, for me to explain that, these concepts would take too long. But once you, because this is what you do in basic Kabbalah, you understand the levels of the soul and how does it relate to creation. And you understand that there are levels of universes. There's a physical universe, a physical world where we live right now, mm-hmm. like all of us, the physical beings. And then there are a few spiritual worlds. And what does it mean? What does it mean in our life, and what does it mean about our purpose? What you start understanding what our purpose is as a human being, or as a soul in the form of a physical being. What is our purpose? Which is, in a nutshell, to grow, to gain some understanding, to go from point A to point B. Through life experiences. But the more you learn that this process, then the more aware you are of everything, the more aware you are that every experience that happens in your life is actually given by the Creator for your own benefit, for you to grow, for you to gain understanding.
Okay.
So has this really changed people's lives?
It does. It does. There is a concept in Hebrew called emuna. Emuna is could be translated as faith, but it's more about certainty that what the Creator brings to you at each moment. We cannot underestimate each moment that happens. Each event in our life is filled with meaning, and each of these events is for you, for your own benefit. So this certainty brings you tranquility and brings you a peace of mind, perhaps, but also a drive to continue and participate. You know, we have this concept in Judaism, which is tikkun olam, the fixing of the world. So the fixing of the world, it's really nice to fix everything around us, but you start fixing yourself, because each of us is a miniature universe. So fix yourself, and then by doing that, you are also fixing the entire universe by doing that.
So you know of cases where people have become much more happier with themselves, or were an addict before, and they were able to drop bad habits. I mean, you've seen those transformations.
I will start with myself. So at least I will speak for myself. Yes. The people that have been studying with me, I mean, you know, I don't want to make claims, but I do see a transformation. Immense transformation.
In what way?
A beautiful one. In compassion, in loving, in embracing life in a way that is richer. You realizing that the amount that you have in your bank account is not what makes you wealthier or poorer. And they are wealthier. When I'm talking, they live a wealthy, healthy life. And I don't want to describe specific examples, but for example, there is someone who unfortunately is suffering from a cancer. And comes to a Kabbalistic meditation, and everything is like, my gosh, it's like better than going to the hospital, and I feel so much better when you are connecting. It's all about connecting with the source of everything. and you realize there are so many realizations in your life, understandings in your life. And when you connect, what happens, the beauty is that you're in harmony with the universe and things happen the way they should happen. Does that make sense?
Does it make sense to you, Steve?
I think so. I kind of get that. I guess
I don't get what that means. I'm like in line with the universe. Explain that to me.
Well, maybe you get to see the bigger picture as opposed to focusing on the little things that we focus on. You can step back and see a bigger picture. Is that sort of what you mean?
It is. But for us, for me, the creator is in the bigger picture and in the details too. So we need to take it to look into the details as well, because it's part of the greater picture too. What I mean is that there's a term that is used by the Buddhists is karma, you know, and we don't have any other term. So let's so you have a karmic effect of cause and effect. And the thing is that, okay, when you understand that you have some karma, but you can also change your karma because nothing is written in stone. Karma can be changed 100%, 200%, like any time. And this is what is being called in harmony with the universe, meaning that you see that the events that happen, you see them happen for your benefit, and they happen at the right time, at the right moment. And when you pay attention to this, then you are in awe.
Right.
You say, this is awesome. So you might, maybe you didn't ask me this question, how can you change your karma, right? Like, I was expecting that. Like, how can you change your karma?
Okay,
right?
How can you change your karma?
Okay. So it's extremely much simpler than anyone can than anyone thinks. First, let me just mention in mysticism, in Jewish mysticism, in Kabbalah, we understand that each month has an energy, you know, so it's astrology, but we don't go by astrology. We don't say, ooh, this month, this is going to happen to you. And the stars are saying that this, beware of an accident, so on and so forth, God forbid. You know what I mean? We don't go by that. Absolutely not. Because yes, you may be predestined for something, but I will tell you really quickly, Talmudic story, and which this story can repeat itself with everybody anytime, and has repeated itself countless of times in different ways. So this is the daughter of Rabbi Akiva. He was one of the greatest sages in our tradition, and the stars were saying that she was supposed to die on her wedding night. But she still got engaged. And back in the days, you know, to more than 2,000 years ago, weddings were the way they are now. You get a little bit crazy, you know, before the wedding, you know, like the banquet and this and that, and the bride gets ready, so on and so forth, and the food, and that, and that. And in the middle of this whole mishugas, this whole craziness, someone, a beggar, knocks at the back door. And who answers? The bride. In the middle of this craziness, the bride answers, and she says, "You're hungry," and she sits him down and she feeds him. The day after, she wakes up, and the father goes in the room after and sees that in those days women wore some sort of like a head covering, like a veil type of thing, you know, like just over the head, and they pinned it on the wall, on the wood wall, and he saw that behind the veil, the scarf, there was a poisonous snake that was pinned, and she didn't notice. And that snake was supposed to actually bite her and kill her, obviously. And it didn't happen. And so Rabbi Akiva understands. He's not. He's a very spiritual man. He asks her what she did, and he says, "You see, and like an act of loving kindness saves you from death." And there are countless of examples in our tradition, countless of modern examples of similar situations, and basically, random act of loving kindness has the power to change everything. So nothing is ever written in stone. Everything can change in the blink of an eye. And so this is what it is to be in harmony also with the universe, is that the more you live a compassionate life at every single moment with every single human being, then that brings the harmony. You understand, like it pays back. You know, your karma is being refined and being positive all the time.
So, Steve, that's what's wrong with us. You understand?
Yeah, I. That's so
when
that's
we
why
work
you,
hard,
I sit at table six. That's why I sit at table six.
You know, I'll explain to the rabbi what that means afterwards. But I really have to say, so when you and I are working all day at sales and we can't get anyone to listen, we should call them up and do something gracious, and maybe something good will happen back. That's been a mistake that we've made. You're just going
but
to
sometimes,
have to embrace it.
But you know what? Maybe keep in mind that sometimes you should be grateful if one individual refuses to do business with you, because you might live to regret it. So like say, oh, thank you, creator, like that.
You know
person,
what? That maybe, I do sometimes feel that way. If I don't get some, like I dodged the bullet. This would have been a bad thing anyway. So I kind of get that a little bit.
Oh
too.
Wow! I never heard you say that before.
Oh, absolutely. I've absolutely felt that way. Sometimes it's
I've heard
like,
you complain when someone
are
doesn't
too
pay.
Much trouble.
Or maybe
yeah.
he's
well,
more connected than you think.
So, well, sometimes yeah. the bullet gets me. That's the other yeah. story.
So Rabbi, I want to know, in this world today that's so that's so divided, with so many people on both sides of the fence being unhappy, with politics, with climate change, with the virus, with, financial situations, family situations, things that we read about in the news, social media that's, completely absorbing everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that Kabbalah may be an answer or a path out of the everyday busyness and brings a calmness to you where you get more focused on what's real and what's not real?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because to be a practitioner of mysticism is in two parts. It's intellectual. You need to learn, because if you don't learn, then there's not much that you know. And then the practice, and there's meditative practices, there's contemplation practices, there's prayer practices, which is, it's all different terms for the same thing, basically. And that brings a peace and the certainty, the emunah that I was talking about, the certainty that you have when you are aware. The more you do this, the more you're aware of each word you utter, each action that you do, each encounter that you have with someone, and then you make sure that whatever that what you say and what you do is for the greater good, and that puts you again the harmony with the universe. So when you have this certainty, you are not really scared of virus. When you live in a state of certainty, you are not really scared of what's going to happen politically. You may be involved, you may be concerned, and it's if you're so inclined, then you have to take action. But ultimately, what changes the whole thing, it starts by you. Please, there's one thing that you, if you can remember from all that, each one of you, of us, has the power to change the universe. Each one of us has a power to change the universe for the better. Each one of us, we don't even know how and which action can change for the better. God forbid, for the worse, but at least right. for the better. And this is to be mindful of each action, of each word that we say. This is what it is, and because we can change the entire universe. If you, there are many stories and whatever. I can tell you if you really want, but even one single, practically mindless prayer has a huge effect, and the power of your act of loving kindness brings light and an incredible, like a huge wheels in the universe that turn. So to think that you are powerless, it's not because you are not the president of a country that you don't have any power. You, just by living your life the best way for the greater good, has a huge influence. And we never know which act will tip the balance and change again for the better
and
good.
Rabbi, and one small act that everyone can do is get a handle stick. This is a very rough transition here. But I'm going to do it anyway. For our sponsor, Handle Stick, which I mentioned earlier, and speaking of the greater good, this is certainly the greater good, is a must-have phone accessory that adds stylish jewelry and usability to your smartphone. Handle Stick attaches directly to the back of your existing smartphone. Rabbi, the lowest is going to get you one of these, I promise.
Yeah,
no need to switch cases. Handle actually, it's a brace system that allows the user to slip his or her fingers through it, so you can effortlessly grip your phone, whether you're speaking, texting, or taking selfies. It feels like the phone is floating in your hand. Handle allows you to complete one-handed use of your phone, so it frees up the other hand for multitasking. Handle Stick is also a kickstand, so you can set up your phone for landscape or portrait mode, for Skyping or FaceTime or watching the debates or whatever you're doing, which is what I did the other night. And yes, you can wirelessly charge through the Handle Stick. It comes in more than 40 styles, including animal prints, lots of colors, fun glitter, and a sophisticated carbon fiber pattern. The Handle Stick starts at, get this, Rabbi, just $10. And you can check it out at Handle, H-A-N-D-L, New York, spelled out, .com. HandleNewYork.com. So that's a little greater good. Any small thing heads you in the right direction. Handle Stick is certainly that thing. And Lois, you will make sure the rabbi gets one, correct?
I will. And I just wanted to mention that the Handle Stick works directly on a smartphone or a case.
Absolutely.
All right.
So that's important
right,
to know.
Right.
Now, I wanted to ask the rabbi another question. In your intro, you mentioned past lives. So
yes.
I'm kind of curious because I always felt that reincarnation is of other religions. Jewish people don't believe in reincarnation. We believe in other things, but not that. That's more like a Hindu belief. Yet, if you are looking at the past lives, you must believe in reincarnation. So is that a split with Judaism, or am I misinformed, which is probably the case?
No. Reincarnation is a Jewish concept. Absolutely,
oh, okay.
100%. Yes, and it's not widely known. Mainstream Judaism doesn't talk about it because there were many concepts that were not spoken, you know, for a very long time. And but actually, in the prayer book for the prayer before going to bed, there is the opening prayer, the opening paragraph starts off by saying that right now I forgive everyone that has hurt me in any way, and it goes on in like all the different ways, and whether in this incarnation or a past incarnation.
Oh.
And so this is a regular prayer book. It's not like one of these, you know, hidden prayer books. It's the one that you can buy in any like Jewish store. So this is just to say the first proof that like we believe in reincarnation, and it is totally a Jewish concept, probably way before the Buddhists started to exist. So yes.
So you can tell us what happens at one of these Kabbalah sessions that someone may go to. What is the agenda, and what actually takes place?
Well, that depends which one you are going to, because I just finished, for example, a series of classes to learn Kabbalistic concepts. For example, talk about soul, talk about the universes, talk about all these different concepts and how it affects us. And there's angels and guides and how do we progress from one to the next, reincarnation. So this is the learning part. And then you can have Kabbalistic meditation. And in this, the way I do it is usually with them, because the first part of this incarnation, I was a musician, so I like to play music. And music in mysticism is one of the means to attain a very high level of connection. We say the prophets use music in order to to be in state of prophecy. So music really helps us to be in a great state of meditation, and us in our mini way to get a message, prophetic messages that come into inspiration, and then, or sometimes just meditation just to feel good, you know. Mm-hmm. And I usually do guided meditation, because each week there's a special energy that comes from the narrative of the Torah, the Bible, and or the energy of the month, and so the guided meditation is gleaned from this energy.
How many rabbis are involved with Kabbalah?
I have no idea. In Miami Beach, I don't know. Like, there are very few in the world. That is a good question. I have no idea.
So it's not that common that every rabbi I meet will know about Kabbalah.
No. Like, if you a mainstream, normal, regular synagogue, no. It's not common. No.
And is the Kabbalah method, or I'm just, maybe that's the wrong word, is it growing, or is there that much interest, or is it waning? You know, people are not interested anymore.
I would say that there is a great need, and this need produces an interest. So,
Is there any way that you could do this over the web, that people can follow you? Or it doesn't have the same meaning? No, of course.
I mean,
she's wondering if you can learn about Kabbalah rather than
actually spectate one of his sessions.
Oh.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You don't need to be in front. I mean, we're fortunate to live in a time where we have this incredible technology, and you can take classes on the web, you know, with a camera, and then it's as if you were there. And if you put it on your TV screen, it's as if it's bigger than life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
That's pretty amazing. And what do the Christians have that's like the equivalent of Kabbalah for Jews?
I am not familiar of a practice of but they do have a deep mystical practice. Islam has a mystical practice. It's called Sufism, the Sufi.
And Sufi, yes, beautiful. I know Sufi, yes.
Yeah. And it's,
they
it's
snap
beautiful.
Their fingers, right.
There's different techniques, and mm-hmm. I've been to sessions, and they're excellent meditators. It's beautiful, beautiful. They're beautiful people.
You would consider yourself going to a Sufi practice?
I did go. I did attend. Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Because I was interested.
Did you feel the karma?
Yes, of course you feel when you have authentic meditation with love, and you have only one God, you know, after all, you know, we all share the same God. Mm-hmm. And it's only for the greater good, then yes, it's good. You know, like, we meditate together, it's beautiful. When Rumi, the founder of Sufism, died, He had countless hundreds of people that came of different religions, of the three Abrahamic religions that came to his funeral. So, you know, ultimately, when you study mysticism, you know, we meet each other.
So maybe I'm going to get you a gig with the Congress. So maybe you could get all the houses together politically and on the same song sheet.
Like, I'm up for the challenge.
I think on that that ethereal impossible note.
No, like impossible is not possible. But if you give me a coat of armor, yes, that might be a good thing. I don't know.
See, before we leave, I just want the rabbi, just a few sentences, where you were born, where you lived, just to go through that again so people understand, you know, all the, you know, the worldliness of you.
Okay, I happened to be born in Montreal, and I grew up in Central America. And
where is Central America?
Honduras and Nicaragua, and then in Africa, in Mali. And I had an incredible childhood growing up in all these countries, and then I spent most of my life in Paris, and this is where I studied, and I studied at conservatory for music, and then after that I went to yeshiva. And then in the States, I lived mostly in the South. We moved from Paris, we moved to Chicago, and in April there was a huge snowstorm, and I was flabbergasted, and I said, you know, I don't think we could live here. So we moved to Florida, and then after that, subsequently, we lived in Phoenix and Texas, and we're back here on the beach.
So what were your parents that you moved around so much?
My father was a diplomat for France, but he was Spanish. And sometimes he would, for example, we went to Nicaragua in the mid 70s, there was an earthquake. So he took on a contract to help them build houses there. So he built a school, engineering school. And so this is what he did.
So you moved around.
He moved around, like before me, before I came around. He lived in many countries in Africa, helping out.
And when did you find out that you really wanted to follow, you know, a life in religion?
I guess looking back, I knew since I was really young, because I was always spiritually oriented. Music was really also a passion that's very spiritual for me. It was to bring a spiritual experience, or like some sort of mystical experience through music. That was the purpose of doing music for me, and for the people, for the audience, and for myself too. And in looking back, I see that all the events where we moved, my wife and I in Paris, and then the people and the events that all got together for me to study in a great yeshiva in Paris, like one of the greatest yeshivot, and then and also in Jerusalem. So I may have wanted it, but I think that sort of predestination happened beautifully, and it was beautifully engineered.
Well, that's wonderful. I'm glad you shared that with us. Steve, that's a wrap.
Okay. Well, Rabbi, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. You're so much fun.
This
is wonderful, really. And people are going to enjoy this recording very much. So stay with us.
Absolutely. And once again, I'm Steve Greenberg with
Lois Whitman Hess.
And we have been Lying on the Beach. So long, everybody.
Thank you.